For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Support for this podcast is provided by Subchuck Law. Revolution Recap thanks Subchuck Law for their support of our show, local independent media, and their mission of bringing unbiased truth. Revolution Recap would also like to thank Six Point Builders for their support. Six Point Builders are builders of fine custom homes in the Boston metropolitan area. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Revolution Recap. The Revolution continued to struggle as they had another disappointing result on the road with a 2-2 draw against the Chicago Fire. On the plus side, Carlos Hill and Thomas Chancalay scored goals. Clint Pierre earned his first point as interim head coach, and the Revs are officially in the playoffs. Yay! I'm Greg Johnstone. Joining me tonight from the Blazing Musket is Sam Minton. Sam, how's it going? We haven't been on the show in 3 weeks. I assume we didn't miss anything important, did we?
No, as soon as business as usual, no controversy, no packed press conferences featuring The Athletic and, you know, Tara Sullivan. I think it was just business as usual, no departures, everything looking good for the future of the New England Revolution. Maybe I'm wrong, but everything I think is fine, right?
I think so. Last time we were on the show, I believe we were talking, the big controversy was Noel Buck wearing an England kit to the game. I imagine that is still at the front of everyone's mind. But we'll get into that. We'll get into some listener questions. See what's really on the minds of our listeners today. But before we get into this game and anything else we may have missed over the past few weeks, I want to tell you about our friends at BetOnline. They are the presenting sponsors of this podcast. And football is back, and BetOnline is your number one information for all of your sports wagering info with all the up-to-minute stats, news, scores, and matchup breakdowns. Get the latest odds, spreads, and totals from the NFL and college football at your fingertips with BetOnline's real-time updates on statistics, news, and odds. From week one all the way to the college football playoff and Super Bowl, BetOnline gives you the access to the best football promotions and contests available anywhere online. So head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Remember to use our promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That is promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts. And Sam, I'm looking at my notes here. Bruce Arena resigned?
What? This is news to me.
I gotta say, I did listen to the last couple of weeks of Revolution Recap that Sean, and I want to give a tip of the cap to Sean and Hayden and Andy for covering this very well. I think they've done a very good job of recapping the chaos at Patriot Place over the past few weeks. But I do want to give my take, and hopefully the listeners don't mind me just kind of throwing out some bullet points that I think are worth reemphasizing and I feel has kind of been passed over in all the chaos. But one, I don't think Bruce Arena is a victim in any sort of way. I think, obviously, with the results, I think a lot of people are clamoring for Bruce Arena, but I think the fact that Major League Soccer would make him basically reapply and file a petition to be reinstated to get a job in Major League Soccer, I think we can assume Bruce Arena did something that requires him to be removed from this position. I know he resigned, but I assume the Revolution would have fired him if he refused to resign, or Major League Soccer would have forced the hand in him leaving. So I know he released a statement where it didn't sound like he admitted guilt, but I think it seems like the writing is on the wall that Bruce Arena, one way or another, the investigation was leading him out the door, and I can't imagine we see him in Major League Soccer again. Two, I want to say Richie Williams should not have ever been put in charge of this team as an interim coach, not because he filed a complaint or anything like that. And I also don't think you get into some murky waters where you removing him from a situation, you can't retaliate against a whistleblower or someone who files a complaint. But the fact that Richie Williams is getting in fights with other assistant coaches and having altercations with Shalry Joseph, obviously that was always going to lead to a very messy locker room. And I think the results are as predicted once that detail came out. And I also am going to say, I know that Pablo Maher of The Athletic kind of hinted at this, but it sounds like I'm impressed that the players were able to have such positive results, because it sounds like this locker room has been a mess from a coaching standpoint. There should have been some fires put out in the offseason, and they should have found a much more cohesive coaching staff, it sounds like. So I think Richie Williams never should have been the interim coach. I think what they've done now with Clint Pied being elevated and put in charge, I think they got it right, but they got it right too late. I think that should have been done from day one. And I think that Brian Bolello doing a press conference after Richie Williams doing a press conference where he got sent out to the Wolves, I think Bolello should have been out there on Monday taking the hit instead of waiting for Richie Williams to get absolutely scorched and then doing his press conference afterwards. So I understand that there's probably some NDAs, or I guess Shalry Joseph hasn't signed an NDA or whatever, but I'm sure there is some sort of agreement that coaches and executives at the Revolution in Major League Soccer, they can't talk about this. I'm sure there is something that we probably won't get the full story. And I feel like I tried giving some warnings out to people when we were talking about how come we're not hearing about it. And I said a few months ago or a few weeks ago that I think the real concern is they're not going to tell us what it is. I wouldn't be shocked if we don't get the full story, or if we only get one side of the story. I think that's just how it's going to be. And yeah, it's disappointing. I think from a fan point standpoint, it kind of sucks. And right now, it seems like it's torpedoing the season a little bit. So all of it sucks, but we march on. Sam, anything you want to add?
Yeah, you know, definitely was talking about it a lot. Shout out to Tommy Quinlan. We were on Spaces basically every night that week, kind of recapping the day's news. You know, I will kind of push back, you know. I apologize for forgetting what you said at the start, but Bruce Arena did kind of admit some wrongdoing. You know, in his statement, he said, "Finally, I know that I've made some mistakes, and moving forward, I plan to spend some time reflecting on the situation and taking corrective steps to address what has transpired." So, like you said, I definitely don't think Bruce is a victim. I think at the minimum, something happened, and it doesn't really matter who reported it and the situation around that. MLS kind of came out and said there was some corrective action and that he would have to, you know, basically almost apply for reinstatement if he wished to, you know, get another coaching job or to work in the league. So it definitely seems like Bruce is guilty of something, whether it was worthy of his job or what it may be, that's up in the air. But I do think, like you mentioned, I don't know if he will ever hear about it. You know, maybe Bruce one day will do a tell-all. That wouldn't surprise me. But even myself, I've reached out to MLS to see if, obviously, if they would release it. I haven't gotten a comment. And, you know, also too, if MLS Commissioner Don Garber would release a statement about it. I haven't got a comment on that. So it definitely feels like it's going to be hush-hush, kind of try and sweep everything under the rug and move on as quickly as possible. So it could be quite some time, or possibly we might never know what happened. But like you mentioned, it was a very dysfunctional locker room. Coaches leaving trainings reportedly, physical altercations. It was absolutely chaotic, and it's almost impressive what the Revs were able to do in spite of that. But now you have a second team head coach stepping up to the first team. You have clinched a playoff spot. But how far are you going to be able to go with him steering the ship? I did find it interesting. We might get into it when we talk about a little bit about tactics, but it seems like Clint Pierre has been very collaborative. You know, he kind of came to the players regarding, you know, formation change and tactics change, and they tried it out, and they said, oh, yeah, we're liking this, so let's try it out. So he seems like he's going to be collaborative, not going to try and shake the boat. It'll be interesting to see how far, you know, if any, you know, advancing they can do in the MLS playoffs.
Well, you're kind of hitting on my key takeaway. Brought to you by The Rebellion. Go check them out at anyrebellion.org to learn more about their organization, how you can get involved with supporter culture. But my key takeaway here, actually, and I'm going to jump the line here. Normally, I let you get first dibs, but I just want to say that Clint Pierre, he recognizes that the way Bruce was doing things or the way it was being done by his predecessors, it's not going to work going forward. Brandon Bye's absence is going to be a big issue. They need to do something differently, and he doesn't have a ton of time to do it. He can't bring in new players to fit in a new system. So this is a very unfair situation for a coach not only stepping into a Major League Soccer head coaching role for the first time ever, but he's doing it with a dysfunctional locker room, with a shortened coaching staff. They basically brought in Todd Ramos as an assistant coach because he's available and he lives in New England. That's how I assume that's happening. I believe Marcelo Santos is doing like double duty with Revs 2 and the first team. I believe he's still an assistant coach with both. They're very short staffed right now. This is his first major league coaching soccer head coaching experience. And he can't change any of the pieces. I mean, he's really just getting thrown into the fire and is trying to do the best with a hand that's looks a lot like an 8-3 split. It's not exactly pocket aces. So I think Clint Pierre tried some new things, didn't get a great result. We'll talk about the inverted left back. We'll talk about Polster moving to the left. We'll talk about all that. Not all of it was gravy, but I'm encouraged that Clint Pierre is not just throwing out a lineup, which is the same exact thing that we've seen week after week after week, because that to me would seem like mailing it in and praying for the best. And it looks like, you mentioned him bringing in the team. Omar Gonzalez talked about the system that they're trying to incorporate, and they showed it, and they ran it in practice a few times, and he said everyone was all in on it. It seems like Clint Pierre is earning a little bit of trust with the players, and I don't know if it's going to work, but I give him a lot of credit for trying something a little bit different and throwing something out there, because the old system I don't think was going to have any chance going into the playoffs.
Yeah, and you know, it's definitely kind of a juggling act for him, because you have a lot of guys in that midfield that you're going to want to get into the games. You know, you saw Noel Buck get into the starting 11. That isn't something that we've been seeing as of late. You saw Ian Hartz have to go to the bench. You saw Andrew Farrell have to go to the bench. And, you know, while there's some holes in the Revolution roster currently due to injuries and obviously, you know, players being transferred such as Georgia Petrovic, they are pretty deep, especially in that midfield. So he does have some selection headaches. We were lucky enough to see Ima Boateng get back out on the field coming off the bench. So it seems like they're taking steps in the right direction to get the guys out there that they want to be in their preferred positions or best positions. But it still seems like there could be some tinkering going on to kind of fine-tune things as you head into that MLS Cup playoffs.
I'm also a little concerned that we're and maybe it'll take a little bit of time to, again, figure it out. I mean, we don't have a whole lot of time, so I hope he figures it out fast. I hope maybe a home game changes some things. But you mentioned the subs. He brought in Bobby Wood and Ian Harks in the 62nd minute. He brought in Ima Boateng in the 86th minute, which seemed a little too late for me. I think Ima should have came in a lot sooner. But that was it. No Esmir in this game. No T-Mac. No Ben Sweat. And I know Ben Sweat is not exactly an impact sub, but I thought maybe, you know, Polster has to cover a lot of ground in that inverted left-back system. And so I thought maybe you're going to be putting in Ben Sweat at some point and maybe taking off Marc-Anthony Kay and moving Polster to midfield. So maybe he gets a little bit of rest, but they rode Polster in that left-back inverted spot for 90 minutes. So really interesting to see how he incorporates his bench over the next few weeks and how he, if he changes anything up from what we saw here, because I think this is going to be some evolving tactics over the next few weeks, and he doesn't have a lot of time to mess around. You really have to figure it out in the games where you also have to win them. So he has a very, very difficult job, and I hope he can pull this off, but man, it's going to be very tough.
Yeah, and you know, we'll probably get into more detail about it later, but I wasn't necessarily the biggest fan of having Polster play at left back. I don't know if he's ever played that position before. Obviously, played on the right, but and playing on the left isn't too different, but isn't something he's necessarily used to, and especially how he was deployed in that role. It didn't necessarily, you know, suit his game, and it left the Revolution open. So personally, I would have loved to see DeJuan stay on the left, have someone like Andrew Farrell on the right, but we can definitely get to that in more detail. But definitely some concerning changes, but also, you know, some positive ones.
We'll get into that later. Right now, let's get to your key takeaway, Sam. What did you think coming out of this game?
Yeah, to kind of, you know, go a bit more into, you know, Clint Pia's head and his changes that he's making. Seems very determined to make Giacomo Brioni, a lone striker, have him, you know, being able to do it all up top. And it continues to not go well. I will say he did get an assist, though he pretty much laid it off to Carter's heel, and I'm quite confident you could do that, Gregory. But he also did have 92% completed passes, so good for him on that. But 62 minutes, again, he came off for Bobby Wood, 24 touches. Both of his shots were blocked. Wasn't really able to create anything in terms of goal-scoring opportunities. Continues to not be able to score on the road. It's been quite some time since he scored overall. So for someone like your designated player, you want to see more from him. And it seems like he's much better suited to having a striker partner. He has improved this hold-up game. I'll give him credit. And also, too, part of it lies on his teammates not providing him with quality service. But it just seems like Clint Pia and, you know, before that, Richie Williams, they just want to keep deploying him as a lone striker up top, and it just doesn't seem to fit his game. Obviously, if he wants to become a top striker, it will have to become something. But I think if the Revolution want to win games, you either have to have Bobby Wood or, when healthy, Gustavo Bode next to him to really unlock the attack and get things going up there.
I think that's a good correct take, and we do have a question here. Let's kind of dip into our listener questions, because this kind of touches along with what you're saying here. But Mike Kennedy says, it's clear Brioni isn't as effective without a second striker. Should Wood start along him? I think ultimately you want Bo up there, but I think Bobby Wood and Brioni might be too similar in terms of a traditional number nine. I don't know if playing them both would work. I feel maybe you would rather move up Chancolet and put him along with Wood and kind of have him maybe as a second striker in a bow type role. But I don't know. What do you think? Do you think maybe playing Bobby Wood and Brioni would work better than what they're doing now?
I would definitely say that Bobby Wood and Brioni would work better, because I think Bobby Wood would be doing more of the dirty work, kind of, you know, going up, trying to win balls, being physical. And obviously I think he's much better when it comes to hold up play. And we've seen it. A lot of Rioni's goals have come based on him making runs and actually displaying his speed. So I think if he's able to focus more on that and is able to get that service, I think he would do a lot better. We might start seeing him find the back of the net. You know, when he had Gustavo Bo up there, it seemed like that was also something they were able to do. He was able to get in behind opponents and able to find goals. So I definitely think, no matter if it's, you know, Bo Wood, I think he would do much better. It's interesting to possibly have Chancolai up there, because maybe that allows you to have someone like Ima Boateng, or just have more of those midfielders that you're very strong in out in the starting 11. But I would be perfectly fine if, well, Gustavo Bo is recuperating, hopefully he's back soon. It would be great if he could come back for this home game. But as long as he's recuperating, I'd be perfectly fine with Brioni and Wood up top.
Will Morris, he also says, despite their early season troubles playing together, is it worth attempting Wood and Brioni together again until Bo is back? Neither look very good alone up top. So Will also agreeing with you there. One thing I want to point out, too, about Brioni, you mentioned he's never scored a road goal for the Revolution. That is a problem. And I remember he scored this hat trick in League's Cup. And I remember people wrote in and said, do we owe him an apology? And, you know, oh, he's really coming together. And Sam, let's talk about what he's done since then. Are you ready for that?
Oh, I'm ready.
So there have been 602 minutes since he was pulled from the San Luis game in the League's Cup. He scored one goal since then. He scored one goal in 602 minutes since his game where he scored the hat trick. And it's been 320 minutes since his last goal. So those aren't designated player numbers. Those aren't starting forward numbers. And so I know he can't play as a single striker well. It doesn't suit him on the road. He's a designated player. He's got to figure it out. And he's turning 25 next month. So, you know, we can't really cater a ton around him. And when you see him missing that cross from, I believe it was Tronchley, maybe it was Carlos Gil, who kind of chipped the ball over the top and he barely skims off his head and lands right in the keeper's arms. It's really frustrating. So kudos for the assist. Really enjoyed the hold-up play. We're seeing some little bits and pieces that are great, but he's 24. He's not 20. We need to see that step in improvement. We talked about this at the beginning of the season. He's gotten a string of games. The results aren't there. And his ratios look decent because he's had some multi-goal games. He has 600 his last minutes. He's scored one goal. So the Revs have some home games coming up. Maybe they're going to be playing on the front foot a little bit better. Maybe that suits his game a little bit better. But on the road, these last three games, he's been pretty invisible here. And it's almost to the point where I've said, maybe this is too ridiculous and maybe it's just too simplistic. Could we just play Bobby Wood on the road and Vrioni at home? I mean, I feel like Bobby Wood connects with the team a lot better and is a lot better at hold-up play on the road, whereas Vrioni is better at getting into the box, and when the team is playing on the front foot, he's getting into dangerous positions, whereas on the road, it just doesn't seem like he's doing that. Maybe that's stupid, but I just feel like when the Revs are on the front foot, Vrioni's a lot more dangerous, whereas when they're playing back and trying to gain some sort of possession and move the ball forward, I mean, he's barely touching the ball.
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it's stupid. I would say that if that is the case, if that's something the Revolution would have to do, then I think you would have to say that Giacomo Vrioni isn't worthy of being a DP. And then you have to have that discussion. And obviously, with Gustavo Boa possibly leaving the offseason, if you have Vrioni as your lone DP striker, you're going to need him to perform at a much more consistent basis. So, you know, if that is the case, I would say you need to move on from Brioni and get an actual capable DP number 9. But you could be in real trouble with Gustavo Boa possibly leaving the club unless they're able to make some miracle deal and he's able to take a massive pay cut.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting. And it's weird because I'm somewhere in between the anti-Brioni crowd and the pro-Brioni crowd. I don't want to completely give up on him and say we need to completely discard him, but he has these just long droughts where we're just not seeing really anything from him. And we're certainly not seeing designated player production from him. So I think the answer is a two striker system, and tying this into Mikey takeaway and the formation change. I think the key that's going to unlock all of this is some sort of 3-5-2 where you have Dwan Jones and someone else as wingbacks pushing forward. You have two strikers. I think that, truthfully, is probably the way to go when Henry Kessler gets healthy. But I don't know. It's going to be very interesting to see what Clint Pia decides. And they've played with one striker for so long, I almost kind of doubt that they're going to shift to the two-striker formation, or Bo might not ever come back healthy. I just feel like everything's going wrong. So hopefully we get to see this team unlock their full potential at some stage. So you want to get into some listener questions, Sam?
Oh, let's get it.
We got a lot. We got a lot. Let's start in the defensive midfield. Marc-Anthony Kay, some people not feeling he did a very good job. Paulo says, was this Marc-Anthony Kay's worst game? He was a turnover machine tonight. And then we also had another comment here from Will. Is Marc-Anthony Kay colorblind? He must have sent 5 passes a game straight to an opposition player. So Marc-Anthony Kay, what do you think of his night? And do you think it was his worst game with the Revs so far?
Yeah, I definitely don't think it was his best. But like it was mentioned, had some turnovers and just, I guess, not smart plays. You know, it was definitely interesting to see him deployed as that lone defensive mid. I was someone who necessarily wasn't mad at it. You know, it was definitely difficult to see Ian Hart move to the bench. And I think maybe if Matt Polster, you know, isn't at that left back position, he could possibly be on the bench because of it. But overall, I've been pleased with his play, but it definitely seems like he's on a downward trajectory and kind of needs to have a good performance. You know, he brings that physical play that you would want from a defensive midfielder. Saw him once again getting in the middle of, I think, multiple scuffles. So you love to see that, and just having kind of Adam Forsen in the midfield, who's going to protect their captain and Carlos Hill and his teammates. But whether it just be, you know, not really marking your man that well, I think it was on the second goal, if I'm correct, or where he just kind of, you know, lets his man and doesn't really step up to him. And then also, too, just kind of lets his man go, I think, for the first goal. So definitely could do better defensively. We'll probably be looking at the film and thinking he could do a little bit better. But still, you know, I rate him pretty high in this midfield. I just think he's kind of gotten a blip and, you know, just has to fix that. I don't think it's, you know, indicative of his overall, you know, ability and performance. Even if you were to kind of look at it, I'm someone who sees him, you know, being a starter in that kind of, you know, sixth defensive midfield role compared to someone like Matt Polster. I think maybe you deploy Ian Hartz a bit forward, but if he's getting 6 minutes, I wouldn't be mad as well. But definitely not his best performance against Chicago Fire.
Yeah, stats don't hate on him too much. 86% pass accuracy. He was 3 for 5 on tackles, 1-2 clearances, 1 headed clearance. He was 5 for 11 on ground duels, so 45%. Not horrific, but certainly not good. I think a lot of it, too, is Polster's out of position when they gain possession. Polster's pushing up, we say, the only defensive midfielder in Marc-Anthony Kay, but Polster's really kind of shifting into that central midfield as well when he's up there. So it's kind of interesting to see Polster kind of do this. But when you lose possession, there's a lot of gaps back there. And it seemed like Marc-Anthony Kay was having a difficult time figuring out where to be. It certainly looked weird on television having Dave Romney kind of move over and play kind of left center back. And those big gaps between Romney and Omar DeJuan Jones when DeJuan Jones was back. And you're right, Traeger had the same comment as you did, Sam. In my eyes, Marc-Anthony Kay is a massive liability at the six because he has a tendency to drop deep into the box when we're under attack, which leaves the area at the top of the box vacant for the opposing team. That's exactly what happened on the second goal there. It seems like in that scenario, Marc-Anthony Kay is dropping back because it's kind of just organized chaos at that point. So maybe it's the tactical lineup and it just maybe it was something he had a tough time adjusting to, but it certainly seemed like yesterday he had a bit of a rough time. So, I'm not giving Marc-Anthony Kay some positive marks in this game. We did have one more comment here, too. Polster is so underrated. Taking him out of position is a massive mistake, and Marc-Anthony Kay is not doing well at central defensive midfield at all. Polster was a huge part of the team's success in 2021 and should have a guaranteed start at the six. Unfortunately, we have only one starting fullback. Thoughts? So let's talk directly about this. Polster at left back. Thanks, Sam. Is this a mistake moving him to left back?
Yeah, I would say it was. I would have much rather seen DeJuan Jones move over to left back and maybe kind of play a more traditional, you know, four-man back line and have Andrew Farrell there. I think Farrell is kind of better defensively in that area, and just how Polster was deployed, like you mentioned, he was in attack basically going up into the midfield, and so it left the Revolution extremely wide open and susceptible to the counterattack, and we saw it on multiple occasions against the Fire. So I think you need kind of more of those traditional wings. Obviously, the wings in the Revolution system do get forward. But just with how they were deployed against Chicago, it didn't really work well. I would much rather see Polster in the midfield, even if it means coming off the bench. I wouldn't say he's guaranteed a spot. If you're looking at having one defensive midfielder out there, I would probably look at Ian Hartz and then probably Marc-Anthony Kay before getting to Polster. But overall, just not really a fan of that decision. Again, out of position, like was mentioned, would much rather see him at the six and playing more of a natural position for him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree 100%. It is interesting. I think this inverted left back thing is going to stay. I don't know who else could run what they are doing with Polster. I was thinking maybe Ian Harkes could do that. But I don't know. I think Polster is in tying this back into 2021 and Derek's comment, Polster was kind of the guy that broke lines in 2021, and was such a huge part of kind of passing out of the defensive midfield. It's good. I'm curious to see if they stick with this, or if they try something new with a home game against Charlotte. Be very interesting, but it certainly seems like Marc-Anthony Kay might be a liability at defensive midfield. If that's the case, why not move Polster back there and try someone else in that spot? It'll be very interesting. Big Nation also said Mark Anthony Kay had a ton of passes cut out, but did he also get away with one on the VAR review? Certainly didn't feel like it met the clear and obvious requirement to go to review, but had the whistle been for a penalty kick, would that have been reversed? And he's talking about in the extra time, Mark Anthony Kay, I believe it was on Gutierrez, who actually went down injured. I actually don't know if, I don't know if you heard anything, Sam. I don't know if it's looked bad. Have not heard an update on his injury status, but there's very, very little contact on going down the box. And I think, truthfully, if there wasn't an injury on that play, that wouldn't have gone to VAR. I think maybe the injury made it look like there was more contact than there was. I think even if there was a penalty kick in the moment, I have to believe it would have been overturned because it did not look like a foul at all. And I also agree with Big Nation's comment here that I was surprised it went to VAR at all for a penalty kick review. So, Sam, what did you think about the VAR, and did the refs get it right?
Yeah, it was definitely kind of shocking. I did not expect that to go to the VAR, but I think it would have been interesting if it was ruled a penalty just because of that whole clear and obvious. It makes it so much more difficult to overturn something compared to confirming something. So I think if it was possibly, you know, ruled a penalty or a foul, because I think it was outside the box, that it probably would have been given and maybe you see a yellow card just because clear and obvious is very vague at points. So it was definitely interesting. I'm glad there wasn't a foul. Like, he just kind of got caught. It was a rough injury. I did not enjoy seeing the replay on multiple occasions. My knee was feeling quite weird after watching it. But obviously poor luck, and hope that Gutierrez is feeling better. But yeah, don't think it was a penalty, but it would have been interesting to see if it was, you know, rule of foul, if they would have overturned it just based on it, the clear and obvious criteria.
Yep, agree with you 100%. Let's move on. Revs fan on Twitter says, should we expecting a run against Charlotte after two poor displays against non-playoff teams? I think you can go more than two poor displays. I think even since the Austin game, Minnesota, Colorado, and Chicago, this has been a very poor string of four games that really, if you're the Revolution coming into this span, you should have been looking to secure second place. They're now sitting in sixth place, looking up, trying to make back some places that they lost over the past month. So what should we be expecting going into the Charlotte game?
Yeah, I think the Reds are desperate for a win. Obviously, it'd be great for Clint Pia getting his first win as interim head coach, but I just think they really need 3 points. This Eastern Conference is extremely tight, and positions are going to matter, especially when you have Inter Miami attempting to climb up. And if you have to face Lionel Messi, you're going to be in trouble. Obviously, it's expanded, so I don't know how far the Revs, you know, will drop. I don't know if they'll be playing kind of those, you know, knockout or play-in games. But I think they do need to get a win just to build some confidence. It's been a long time since they've been able to get a win. There's been a lot that's happened since then. I just think overall, they really need to get a win or else we can start to see the season spiral. And obviously, they made the playoffs, but it very well could be a one and done for the Newman Revolution. And I think also, too, the fact they are playing at home, obviously, I don't think fans are extremely happy, whether it's to be with the investigation and lack of transparency or the play and kind of confusion about the future of a club. So it could increase there, and it'll be interesting to see how the fans react in that first home game without Bruce Arena, without Richie Williams, without Charlie Joseph and Dave Vandenberg. It's going to be really interesting, but I think they desperately need 3 points. I think if you weren't to get 3 points, it would be a massive disappointment.
Yes, and this probably is your last, or I should say most easiest game remaining on the schedule. The last five games of the regular season, you're home versus Charlotte, you're home versus Columbus, you're on the road at Orlando, you're on the road at Nashville, and then you're home versus Philadelphia. That schedule gets tough. I believe, let me check the standings. Yes, all of those games are against playoff teams except for this Charlotte team. All of them are top seven teams right now in the standings. So you're really competing for playoff position here too. A win against Columbus or a result against Columbus is huge. A result against Philadelphia is huge. Looking at the standings right now, as we're recording this at 9 p.m. on Sunday night, Cincinnati is running away with first place, but then you have Orlando, who's currently losing to Inter Miami. in the second spot with 50 points in 30 games. Columbus has 49 points in 30 games. Philadelphia has 49 points in 29 games. Atlanta has 49 points in 31 games. New England has 49 points in 29 games. So they're level with Philadelphia in terms of points and games played. There is room to move up because Atlanta has two games in hand. Columbus has one game in hand. So the Revs can jump over those teams if they play well. It's just a matter of playing well, and they haven't done that in a long time. So this game against Charlotte, who's sitting in 14th place, that has nothing to play for, this has to be a win. This really, really, really has to be a win for the Revolution. And if you want to say, you know, there's been a lot of turmoil, they've been on the road, they're a much better team at home, great. This needs to be 3 points. They can't come away with a draw out of this, because every single game from here on out is really, really important, not just for playoff seeding too, but, you know, a few weeks ago, they were in line for a CONCACAF Champions League spot. That's flying out the window real fast. You got to finish probably somewhere between second and fourth, probably second or third, to get one of those spots. And it's still very attainable. I mean, Orlando is in second place. They're 1 point ahead of them with one extra game played if this result against Inter Miami holds. They really, this season should not be collapsing as fast as it is. And if they had half decent results down the stretch, they're going to have a top four seed. So this game against Charlotte, you have to go out, you have to get a win. If not, we're hitting the panic button. We have not had the panic button very much involved in this season yet. I think the panic meter is at a 9. This Charlotte game, I want a 2-goal-plus victory out of this one. This really has to be a statement for the Revolution.
Must-win game, Greg. I think we're clear. Must-win.
Must-win game. And I think a lot of people have kind of they're in panic mode and they're jumping off the bandwagon, and they're, we'll get to some listener questions that kind of say that later, that they're expecting one and done. But the Revs, there is a path here for the Revolution, because they are a team that's very strong at home. And the way the stupid playoff system is working for the MLS this year is that the first round is best of three, and then it goes to single elimination because they wanted everyone to have a home game, and so they're going to drag out the playoffs as long as possible. So your first round is a best of three, and if you have a top four seed, someone has to come into Gillette and win twice in Gillette. So if you're able to get a top four seed, even if you're playing Columbus or Atlanta or Philadelphia or Nashville or whoever, it's tough to come to Gillette if the Revs play their best soccer and win twice. So I don't know. I'm not sold on them being one and done, but if Charlotte comes to Gillette and makes them look terrible, then I'm hitting the panic button, because, yeah, you know, of course Philadelphia, if Charlotte can come in and beat the Revs, sure, Philadelphia can come and do that, Atlanta can do that, so must win game for me. Walk says, in the two games under Klein PA, if you were watching the broadcast, you get that joke. In the two games under Klein PA, especially this game when Polster played at the inverted left back role, I feel like the Revs were really easy to play through. Tons of space on the wing and in the holding D mid position from time to time. Don't think this would be a fun experience later when we play the likes of the Columbus Crew. So that's kind of a comment that we've kind of reiterated there. A lot of space, bit of a weird formation that left a lot of gaps in the defense, and certainly was exploited by a Chicago team that hadn't scored in a month, by the way. Hadn't scored since August 20th. Scored twice against the Revs. Certainly had a lot of room to run. I'm sure when the uptick in competition, they certainly will have no issue running through those gaps too. So it'll be interesting to see if they stick with it and if they're able to fine-tune it before their schedule gets difficult. Sam, anything you want to add before we move on?
No, I just completely agree, and especially against the Crew and, you know, the Union and Nashville, you could see Hani Mukhtar tearing it up. You could see, you know, that Duke song being played in Philadelphia. It could be really rough if this keeps going. So personally, I hope that Clint PA decides against it and maybe puts DeJuan Jones back home at left back.
Klein PA. Rally Revs fan says, thoughts on PA's tactics tonight, and was it a matchup availability driven, or is it something you think we see more of? You think this might just be a one-time thing or a matchup thing? I wouldn't be surprised. I think we might see this against Charlotte. And I think if it doesn't work against Charlotte, then you throw it in the trash and you try something else. But do you think that this was a one-and-done thing with the inverted left back?
Personally, with the inverted left back, I don't know. I'm kind of stuck. I think there might be that sense that, oh, we're playing at home. We're going to be much more confident. We're kind of be on the front foot, so we don't have to worry about all, you know, whether it be Chicago storming them, you know, on the counter, or Charlotte. But I think Charlotte could take advantage of them. I wouldn't be surprised if we see it deployed in this home game. But if it performs how I would expect it would against Charlotte, I would hope that Clint PA, excuse me, Klein PA, would be kind of come to the conclusion that maybe this isn't the best situation. But I just think I'd rather have DeJuan Jones playing at left back, and I'd rather have Andrew Farrell in the starting 11, especially if you're going to keep Omar at center back.
Traeger says, I appreciate PA trying new things, but playing DJ, I think he means Pulser, playing DJ as a makeshift center back on offense makes him. Sorry, let me restart this again. I appreciate PA trying new things, but playing DJ as a makeshift center back on offense eliminates him as a threat offensively. I think he means Pulser. I also think our over-reliance on midfielders forces us to sacrifice a second striker, leaving Frioni on an island and not taking advantage of his skill set. I believe we agreed with most of that, Sam. Anything you want to say? I believe we touched on that earlier, but in case you want to throw anything else onto Trigger's comment, we can.
Nope. Yeah, like you said, we've already touched upon it, and sounds like what we've been saying.
Justin's iPhone is nailing where I want to go next. Is the Revs' best formation a 3-5-2? Kessler, Romney, Farrell in the back, Chancelier, Harkes, Carlos Heel, Polster, and Jones in the midfield, and then Vrioni and Bo up top. Chancelier at wingback would be a bit of an issue defensively, agree, but with three at the back, I think you could pull it off and add K for Harkes if you really need the extra cover. Agree with that. I don't know how it would really work with Chancelier as a wingback because that would really move him back a lot, but I think you could find some sort of way, especially if Andrew Farrell is out there, he can kind of move into the right back spot if you need him to. I think maybe you just focus on working the ball down the right and having just Chancelier push way up. And you know, if DeJuan Jones is able to stay back a little bit more, that shifts nice and easy into a four-man back line when you are not in possession. But when you're in possession, if Chancelier is already kind of pinned up, we've seen in the past Brandon Bye kind of pinned up way up and play the game almost more in the opposing half than in the defensive half. I think maybe if you just have him as a wing back on paper, but really more of a right midfielder who's looking to go forward, and DeJuan Jones, who only goes forward if they are in possession and the ball's being worked down the left, then I think you could really work it out where you kind of have a shifting formation where you're able to keep enough defensive cover back there. But yeah, I think a 3-5-2, which is what Justin's iPhone described, is kind of what you should be going for at that stage. Any thoughts on that, Sam?
Nah, I would probably agree. I think maybe you just kind of deploy someone like Chancelier more of that, just a traditional kind of like left midfielder compared to that left wing back if you don't want to rely on him defensively. But I think even then, like you mentioned, you can kind of play around the formation when you're in the attack compared to defending to make it work. But I would love to see the 3-5-2. Obviously, you just need to have everybody healthy, and hopefully, you know, we're at the end of September. Hopefully, if you look into October, we'll start to see Henry Kessler, and the back line will look a little bit stronger, especially with who New England has been playing as of late.
I suppose you could play, I think I said I put Chancelier on the left. I think you could put him on the left and, or sorry, I think I said I put him on the right. I think you could put him on the left and put DeJuan Jones on the right. So either one of them is interchangeable.
Oh, yeah, either way, like you mentioned, yeah, my apologies.
Randy LH, thoughts on Chancelier so far? I like him, though I think his decision-making in the final third could use finesse. Sam, thoughts on Chancelier?
Overall, I've been really impressed. I think he's brought what he's been missing since the absence of Dylan Barrero due to his injury. He's also someone like Gustavo Bo, who's just going to launch a shot from anywhere, which I think is welcome at times, and definitely has the leg to be able to have the green light from all over the field. But he's just able to go at defenders. He's been really impressive on the ball. We've seen him, you know, bring out the nutmeg. We've seen him, you know, blow by opponents. But also, too, you know, isn't, you know, worried about going to ground. You know, he's willing to put in the work kind of defensively, and you kind of saw that more in the beginning days, especially when the Revolution were on the road. But overall, been impressed. I think it's 3 goals in about 5 or 6 or 7 matches played. So really impressive from him. And looking to 2024, I know there's kind of conflicting reports. Is he going to be a DP if he comes back for 2024? Is he not? I would be perfectly fine giving the DP tag, especially if you're going to have someone like Gustavo Bo leaving. So really impressed with him, and I think he's someone the Revolution can build on, and obviously thinking ahead in the future. If you have Dylan Barrero on one side and Thomas Chancelier on the other, that's going to cause a lot of problems for opposing defenses and back lines. So I would love to see that. Really impressed with Chancelier so far.
And I think if MLS adds a fourth designated player too, I think that adds to the argument that he should be staying. I think he's been hit on the gotten off on the right foot for the Revolution. He seems to be a fit right away, and he's kind of added a spark that has been missing since Dylan Barrero. I know they're not exactly like-for-like players, but certainly he's made an instant impact. So Silverfoot says Chancalay was on fire, but also is fiery, living up to the reputation he had prior to coming to the Revs. How long until he gets a red card? I believe he also got a yellow card late in the game. I don't know if that was for a foul or if that was just for – what was it for?
It was for a foul, like a ball was going in and the defender was shielding him. I think he tried to get in behind as the goalkeeper's getting it, kind of collided with the goalkeeper.
Oh, yes.
And then kind of, you know, a little scuffle match ensued. And then I think he was talking to another player and basically pleading his case and whatever it may be. He just wants to win the game. I'm playing. I'd love to see it.
Does play with a chip on his shoulder, but does that make him a red card risk? I will also throw out here that looking at his stats on who scored, he had two red cards last year, and it looks like he had one in 2017, 2018. So only three red cards in his career. Not a total red card risk, but I don't know, maybe. He certainly plays with a chip on his shoulder. Do you think he gets a red card anytime in the future?
I will say no. I think he's passed the test in terms of not being like Dylan Barrero. Also, he's a bit older, 24 years old, so he's kind of matured and hasn't have to go through that same process that a younger Barrero is going through. I remember that game when he picked up a second yellow, and one of them, I believe, was for dissent. So I would be too worried about him picking up red. Maybe he'll pick up the occasional yellow, but I think he'll be smart enough to not make any mistakes when playing on a yellow.
Big Nation on Threads. Chancalay had a good match. By the way, be our friend on Threads. We need more people on Threads. We're still on Threads. Are you guys on Threads? Come be our friend on Threads.
Greg, are you on Blue Sky?
No. Well, no. Let's not get crazy.
I got some advice for you if you want.
Let's wait for Threads to die out, and then I'll hop over there. But Chancalay had a good match, but all his first touches felt super heavy, which actually benefited him on the goal because both him and the defenders overcommitted, allowing him to turn. Is that something he'll need to improve on to replace Bo? Is it a bug or a feature? Tim?
I don't know. That hasn't been something I picked up on. So shout out to Big Nation for noticing that. Maybe it's more just a style of play. He is kind of a speedy guy, so maybe he's just wanting to utilize that. I would probably lean towards it being a feature, but there's definitely times where you need him to have a clean touch and kind of be able to get going and not just looking to kind of mess with offenders. So I think there is part of it where you want him to clean it up, but it might just be part of his game. And so far, I've been pleased with his game, so I'm not going to be too critical on his touch, especially because I have the touch of the baby elephant.
Let's get into the good stuff, Sam. You ready to really rip into this team? Because we got some comments here. Steven Smith, why can't this team perform anymore? Last four games, we have thrown away 9 points, two blown 90-plus minute leads, and failure to defeat two teams at the bottom of the standings. Could be sitting pretty in second, as we were for most of the season, but it's been a collapse since Bruce left. We talked about this a little bit. Sam, what's wrong with the team right now?
Well, I do think part of it is the whole calamity regarding Bruce Arena, and obviously he is like probably the greatest MLS coach and, you know, United States soccer coach in history. So I think that does play a role into it. And it just seems like as much as the players want to say it hasn't been a distraction, I would say it probably has been too. And also, you just have a lot of injuries and a lot of absences piling up. So I think it's part due to that, but also too, I don't think you can discount losing someone like Bruce Arena.
Agree 100%. And again, it's a little unfair to Clint Pie, so I'm curious to see how he does in these next few weeks. But yeah, this has been a very bad month for the Revolution. One of the lower points, I think, in recent history, because everything seemed to be going well for the team. And now they're fighting for a home playoff game, which I don't think any of us saw a month ago, especially going into a quote-unquote easy schedule where you're only able to take, I think, 3 or 4 points. So Chad also says on Twitter, the alarm bells are ringing now, right? 4 straight games without a win, 2 against literally the worst teams in the league. Playoffs are secured, but that doesn't change the fact that this team went from second to potentially not even hosting a home playoff game. Agree 100%, Chad. Seamus says, we aren't seeing winning tactics or inspired individual play. The results are fair to poor. I think that might be a little generous. The results have been very poor. But Seamus also says, how can we not expect to see them eliminated immediately in an away playoff game? The Revs were never good enough this year to recover from so many injuries and the loss of Petro and Bruce. Very harsh words. Right now, they look very fair. And again, I think once this team goes on the playoff on the road in the playoffs, they're going to really, really struggle. So it's very imperative for them to not only figure it out tactically going into the playoffs and getting hot for the playoffs, but they also need to move up a few spaces and get a few rounds of home playoff games before. And, you know, that's going to make a really big deal. So one more comment here. Evan Ryan says, so this team stinks. Why should fans bother to pay money and watch this garbage? And he also says, don't go into their undefeated home record. This team isn't winning one playoff game. Every team in the East is begging to play in New England. It's equal to a bye. I love comments that say, don't go into the positives of this team. Why would anyone pay money to see this team? Don't go into their unbeaten home record. Kind of answering the question there. But let's take away their strengths at home. Sam, why should fans bother to pay money to watch this garbage?
Well, I think overall, you know, fans should do whatever they want with their money. But, I mean, they're still a very talented team. You get to see Carlos Hill be absolutely magical. You're going to get to see Thomas Vasilik. I would not be surprised if he made his debut this weekend. You get to see Andrew Farrell possibly do a bicycle kick clearance. Those are sick. Thomas Tronchole also has an amazing shot. And maybe, if you're lucky, you see Giacomo Brioni score a goal. And also, too, there's chicken fingers at Gillette Stadium, and sometimes they're discounted. So yeah,
I've heard a lot of good things about the discounted chicken fingers at Gillette Stadium. And there is a home game, so maybe Vrioni will score next week. I do think there are pieces to this team. It's just not the pieces are better than the sum of the parts right now. You know, you look at the talent in the field: Carlos Hill and Chankele and Dewan Jones, and I really don't think this is a bad team. And I think it's really annoying because at the beginning of the season, I was down on this team and I thought they were going to be a road playoff team, a bottom four seed going into the playoffs. They kind of won me over and they've kind of completely fallen apart since the Bruce Arena departure. I think there is a path here where Vasilik comes in, plays well, you know, is an upgrade from Earl Edwards Jr. Even if he does 80% of what Petrovic does, that's a very good goalkeeper. Kessler comes back, shores up the back line, although I don't think Omar Gonzalez is exactly a huge issue right now. He's played pretty decently, so I don't know how much of an upgrade that is. And Clint Pierre is able to figure out something tactically to make it work. But time is running out. It's really hard to make this pitch that the Revs are going to go into the playoffs and really stun a lot of people because, you know, I'm not saying that they're running through the motions and this is kind of a lame duck team where, you know, there's going to be a turnover in coaching staff and there's going to be a lot of changes and the roster is going to have a lot of turnover. I'm not saying that, but this is kind of what it looks like if that was happening. So it's very frustrating to, you know, reading those last four comments. I can't disagree with much of it. There's not a ton of positives right now for the Revs. But Mike D also says, if when Kessler and Bo return for the playoffs, are they enough to stop us from an early exit? I feel like the last few games have been without Bruce, lethargic with no killer instinct. I agree with that. Again, I think we'd have to look at the bracket, but there's still a path for the Revs to get a 3 seed and maybe go a round or two into the playoffs. But if the Revs are, you know, a 5 or a 6 seed, if they have to go to Philadelphia and win 2 games down there, I think it's a round one exit for them. So I think a lot goes into seeding and a lot goes into the results of the last few games. And truth be told, at the end of the regular season, we're going to know exactly how we feel about this team going into playoffs because they're going to be playing playoff teams in the Eastern Conference. So we'll have something to measure them up by. But right now, they can't really hang with the bottom feeders right now of MLS. And it's very concerning. And hopefully this is just a road trip thing. And once they get home, things are going to turn around for them. And this is just a blip in the radar. But it doesn't seem like that way for me right now.
Yeah, and the Eastern Conference is very strong, especially even at the bottom. So no matter what, I think the Revolution are going to be tested, which could lead to an early exit, or maybe they're galvanized and able to make a run. But I wouldn't bet on it.
BlueJ6 says, why didn't the new keeper play last night? Is he still injured? Touching on that, too, I think it's just he's still getting incorporated with the team. I was a little surprised he wasn't even available on the roster last night. Was there a reason given to why he didn't play?
Yeah, it seems like Clint PA basically said that they're still kind of getting to know him. He's still getting integrated into the squad, getting used to new home and, you know, new club. So again, wouldn't surprise me if we see him play against Charlotte, as I think there needs to kind of be a switch up in goal. And I think most likely Vasily's going to be a superior goalkeeper than Earl Edwards Jr.
I agree with that 100%. Teal Forever also says, can we get Earl Pine Tar or something sticky for his gloves? Is that legal? I don't even think Earl has been that bad. A lot of these goals, no one's getting to, I don't think. He's had some shaky moments. I think he's a decent backup, but I do think Vatsleek is going to be an improvement. Any thoughts on Earl Edwards before we move on?
Yeah, no, I think he's done a valiant effort, especially stepping in amidst all the chaos of Petrovic leaving and, you know, the kind of turmoil within, you know, the coaching staff and squad. So I think he's done a good job, but like you said, much better suited to being a backup, getting that occasional spot start than, you know, starting week in and week out.
Blue Jay, getting back to Blue Jay 6, can the Revs use money from player sales to establish a new designated player, or does Kraft get to keep it all? I'd go for a stud middle defender, someone just to take all of the things in the back. A few things here. In theory, the money generated from sales does have to be spent back in on the team, but, you know, realistically, that's, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that if you sell a player for $17 million, you're increasing $17 million. It's just going to be that $17 million is going to offset current expenses. So Kraft could pocket that money. In terms of what can they use that money on, $1 million could be converted to GAM, which essentially increases your salary cap budget a little bit. We won't get into all of that right now, but $1 million could be converted to GAM, which can be spent kind of on the entire roster somewhere, but the rest of that money has to be spent on a designated player or a U22 player in some form or fashion. Could be spent on a designated player's salary or a transfer fee of a designated player or a U22 player. With Chancelet potentially coming in and Bo going out, the Revs have three designated players and they have a U22 player in Barrero. Maybe there is going to be an additional fourth designated player that money can go to. I personally think that you talk to Carlos Hill about extending his contract 1 year and maybe giving him a pay bump. But there's not many other places you can spend the money within the rules of the salary cap. So they are sitting on a very large bunch of cash. They're still looking to figure out how to spend the Buxa and Turner and Tejon money, because I don't think they've even spent that on the field transfer. So I don't really know how they're going to spend that money, but they need to do something, because if you read the comments from earlier, from 5 or 10 minutes ago, a lot of people, I think, are fed up with this team. So they do need to find a way to improve the on-field product, and maybe that's going to be handed over to a new manager who's got their got a bit of a blank canvas to work with. So yeah, that's what I'd say. Sam, anything you want to add?
I just want to say that you are like the foremost expert on MLS salary nerd stuff. So shout out to you. And yeah, I think especially with kind of the turnover, I wouldn't be surprised to see some guys leave. And I wouldn't be surprised, obviously, to see a new head coach going into 2024. And I think depending on the stature of that coach, maybe you get a similar role of a head coach and sporting director and get kind of that blank canvas and, you know, get the investment, you know, from ownership. But yeah, definitely think the Revolution need to go out, get some guys. Don't know if you know, very weak at outside back, so maybe boost that position. But yeah, definitely some areas where New England can invest that money.
Realistically, that money is going to be invested into maybe a larger coaching staff or more scouting resources or stuff like that. Stuff that's not necessarily on the field, which is not always the most fun answer for fans. I think you'd want to go out and spend $10 million on a player, but realistically, that's just a tough ask. So, and by the way, being the top expert on MLS salary rules, boy, what a sad title that is. That is just so depressing. But Traeger, we got a Traeger question here. Actually, it's not a question. This isn't a question, but please tell Tom Quinlan to stop trying to push his "we shouldn't have sold Petro for $17.5 million propaganda. It's tired and he's flat out wrong for so many reasons. Earl has done a solid job in relief, and I can honestly fault him for only 1 to 3 goals, but he's not the reason they haven't been winning, and he's not doing everything. He's been doing everything in our power to keep us in the games. I'm asking you because Tom doesn't respond to any of my comments. You don't have to mention this message or names. Too late for that, Trigger. But if you could make it clear he's wicked wrong about this, that would be great. Sam, would you like to handle this one first, and then I'll fill in the gaps of where else Tom is wrong?
Yeah, I just do want to point out, Traeger put this in the Discord, revolutionary gap question. So this was definitely going to be set in full. But yeah, you know, definitely have talked to Tom about this on multiple occasions. I don't think the Revolution shouldn't have sold George Patriots. I think they should have. I think even if it was 15.5 mil or, you know, somewhere around there, you sell George Petrovic. And, you know, it's a move he wanted to make. He obviously wanted to go back to Europe. He's going to Chelsea and not really getting that much playing time. So don't know if it's the best thing for him. But it's a move you can't pass up. It's money you cannot pass up. And I don't think Bruce Arena not being here really played into it. Obviously, you know, we'll say that if Bruce is here, he wouldn't have been sold. But I think when you get that amount of money, you have to. And there has been an interesting point. The agency that reps him for Bonus Sports has been really interesting in how they operate. You know, you saw Petrovic have that mini holdout. There was another player rep by them who I believe held out. And then now, too, they have a Portland goalkeeper who's filing a claim with the MLSPA. And it seems like I believe there was some reporting out there in Portland. I forget who it was, so I do apologize. Basically, you know, saying that sources said any game that he didn't get a start, this goalkeeper who's rep by Bonus Sports would demand a trade. So seems like they're building up a negative reputation around MLS, and it seemed like maybe this could get worse. And I would much rather sell George Petrovic and, you know, be able to reinvest that money into the club than just have George Petrovic sitting out game because he said that he didn't go to Chelsea. So overall, I think it's a move you have to make. Obviously, the counterpoint is you're not going to win this season. And I think the Reds have sold themselves to players as a selling club. And I think if you're going to do that, you do need to strike a balance. But if you do get an offer like this for Petrovic, you need to sell him. You need to do right by the player. And obviously, you do have Earl Edwards Jr. stepping in, and he's not George Petrovic. Thomas Vasilik, not George Petrovic. But there are capable goalkeepers, and you still have Carlos Hill, still have Gustavo Bo, you have, you know, Frioni, you have a back line, you have a top talent in DeJuan Jones. You should still be winning games. So I'm not going to say that George Petrovic being sold ruined the Rev season. If I had to say one thing, I would probably at this point say the whole saga with Bruce Arena. If you have to, you know, if I have to pick one thing. But I definitely would disagree with Tom in saying that the Reds shouldn't have sold George Petrovic.
Yeah, and, you know, if we're talking about the Reds' problems, you know, we can point to Earl Edwards Jr. a little bit, but I think it's a combination of Bruce is gone, Bo is hurt and is not the most effective anymore, Bryn Bae's injury, and there's no backup right back that has thrown everything to flux. There's a large number of combination of things that has led to this, and I think the Bruce Arena situation and the locker room turmoil has kind of just pushed it over the edge. In terms of Petrovic, you're hitting the nail on the head, which is a really important topic. We talked about this a few months ago when this popped up, when Petrovic they got a bid for $8 million from Nottingham Forest, and he sat out the league's cup game, and he didn't really have a lot of leverage because that was under his market value. And he had I made a very impassioned plea that he should not be sitting out here, but he's trying to force a move. If Petrovic is sitting out, he's skipping the league's cup game, and you have to basically really negotiate him just to come back because you rejected an $8 million bid from Nottingham Forest. There is not a chance in hell he is coming back if you're rejecting a $17.5 million bid from Chelsea. He's not playing for your team after that. He's not. You can't bring him back and say, yeah, we promise we'll sell you when we get a bid for market value, and then get an over market value bid and expect him to just come to work every day and act like nothing has happened. You've mentioned his agency. We talked about it a little bit at the time. Petrovic would not be here, and he'd be advised to sit out. And truth be told, I would not blame him if the Revs rejected this offer because it was overvalue. It was, the Gaga Slonina was purchased by Chelsea a year ago for, I think, $10 million with $5 million in incentives. There was a loan back with that deal, so maybe that number could go a little bit higher, but $17.5 million is a lot, and it's a lot more than I expected for Petrovic. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. Then I think Turner just went for $10 million from Arsenal to Nottingham Forest. It's a lot of money. There's from a business side, taking away the on-field perspective. Off the field, dollars and cents-wise, it's a really, really good value for the Revolution. And if you're telling players, yeah, this is a stepping stone to a bigger league, and you're rejecting a $17.5 million bid from Chelsea, the player's going to think you're full of crap, and they're going to go home, and they're just going to wait for you to sell them to whoever. So the second that bid came in, Petro was gone. There's really not an argument to rejecting that deal. Bruce would have accepted that deal. Any coach would have accepted that deal. Any sporting director would have accepted that deal. And this is a terrible take. And I'm only comfortable saying Tom Thame because I talked to him and I know he'll be fine with me saying this, but it's an awful, awful. It's nonsensical. And again, we talked about this when it happened. From a fan perspective, this makes the team on field suck a little bit more. It's obviously a downgrade to the team. It obviously decreases your MLS Cup chances. So from a fan perspective, you're not seeing that money, and it sucks. And it's something to very easily get mad about. And it's on the team to reinvest that money. But if you just look at this one transaction, there was no way the Revs could really reject this. And it would reflect poorly on them with their players in the locker room, because players want the best for them. So there's no way they could have rejected that deal, and rejecting that deal wouldn't have changed anything, because Petrarch would have taken his ball and gone home. That's it. There's really not a lot of argument to that.
Yep. And Bruce Arena still wouldn't be here. And that would kind of be the real turning point. So yeah. Love Tom. Want to tell Taylor Twellman stopping a jerk.
No, be a jerk. He's right. Taylor Twellman's right. No. Taylor Twellman is right to dunk on him. That's a terrible take.
Taylor Twellman. No, it's a terrible take, but Taylor Twellman has been quite rude to our boys on the corner.
A little rude, but Taylor Twellman can Vince Carter dunk contest dunk on Tom Quinlan any day of the week if he makes that take. The Petrovic, they shouldn't have sold Petrovic take, is a garbage take, and it's nonsensical. Sorry, Tom. It's a bad take.
I got you there. I think there's been some other instances where Taylor's been mean, and I think go on Revolution Recap, Taylor Twellman, best podcast. Love Revolution Recap. Go on New English Soccer Weekly if you're just going to continue to dunk on Taylor Twellman. But first, go on Revolution Recap.
Peter says, what do you think of Omar starting over Farrell? Has Farrell dropped down the depth chart?
Yeah, that was really surprising to me. I definitely was someone who thought Andrew Farrell would come back, and I think obviously there's some questions about where he would play. Obviously really short at outside back, so wouldn't have been surprised to see him go at right back, and obviously you still have Omar. But there's this new tactical change, and you saw Pulser go left back, DeJuan to right back, and even then I would probably say, okay, so Andrew Farrell's going to play over Omar Gonzalez. I mean, Omar has done well. I think obviously that goal might be a little bit inflated because it meant basically nothing. But he has done well. He's looked a lot better, especially compared to the beginning of his career in New England. But I think he's better suited to not, playing long stretch of games and starting those. I think he's better for the occasional spot start, maybe even a game or two here or there. And besides that, coming off the bench to kind of see out games. But I'm quite shocked, honestly, to see Andrew Farrell. I would say he probably has fallen down the depth chart. I would say he's probably below Omar right now. Seems to be healthy, looking at him at training, it doesn't seem to be an issue. So I would say, yeah, he has fallen down. And personally, I'm a little bit shocked to see him kind of be reserved to the bench in favor of Omar Gonzalez.
The only thing I'll say is that with the lack of outside back depth, maybe Farrell is there just for emergency purposes. But yeah, I Farrell didn't have the best string of games earlier this season, and Omar's played pretty well. So I think they're playing the hot hand, and I think Omar has probably jumped over Andrew Farrell at this point in the depth chart, which would be a weird statement to make at the beginning of the year. Gonzalez has played pretty well to the point, Sam, that I wouldn't say bring him back on his current salary, which I believe is $425. But, I mean, are you extending a contract offer to Omar Gonzalez for, let's say, $225,000 in a backup role? I mean, I think you are talking about looking at a one-year extension at lesser money for Omar Gonzalez because he played pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of have to go into them now, who's going to be the next sporting director, who's going to be the next head coach. Omar was actually quite supportive of Bruce Arena, talking about him post-game after the Chicago match. He was asked about kind of Arena's absence by Seth McCumber. So yeah, maybe that plays a role in maybe him leaving, but I would be too upset if he did stay. But personally, I don't know if he does come back. But yeah, I do think part of the outside back issues have, forced Farrell to kind of stay out. Would love to see Ryan Spalding get some playing time, basically because I think then you're able to kind of have two true outside backs compared to Polster, and obviously Farrell's kind of started his career there and has been forced to play there. But it seems like Spalding's falling down the depth chart. Don't think you're going to see Ben Sweat start, so you're kind of stuck with this makeshift group of outside backs, and that seems to mean that Andrew Farrell is out of the starting 11.
Let's wrap up with a comment on Threads. Be our friend on Threads. If you're on Threads, make sure you follow us on Threads. Kevin C. Got a chance to watch MLS 360 before kickoff. As a neutral, the refereeing in this league is horrendous. Agree. Hey, can't get through a podcast without mentioning how terrible the refereeing is in Major League Soccer. I don't think there was any controversy in this one besides the VAR bizarre review, but that wasn't on the referee. That was on the VAR referee. So, yeah, I think that's it. I don't think we have anything else to talk about. Sam, anything else on your mind tonight?
No, I'm doing good. I'm running on basically like 4 hours of sleep because, as an avid F1 fan, after covering the Rams game, I stayed up and watched the Japanese Grand Prix, and it was kind of interesting. So that was good.
Kind of interesting. That's a very good way to put F1 this year. Max Verstappen won easily, and the race was kind of interesting. That recaps a lot of the races this year. So, Sam, where can people find you on social media, and where can people find your work?
Yeah, I mean, definitely follow the Blazing Musket. I'm not really out here tweeting, but yeah, definitely follow the Blazing Musket at Blazing Musket on Twitter. Definitely make sure to check out all our work at the site of blazingmusket.com. If you would be so kind, become a free subscriber. If you would be even kinder, become a paid subscriber. But yeah, check out all our work there, covering all the teams across New England, the Upper Montgreen, Hartford Athletic, Rhode Island FC, and of course your New England Revolution. And also too, we got our Instagram. Check us out there at the Blazing Musket, and we got a YouTube channel posting all post-game pressers and stuff like that, so you can watch them and hear my lovely voice ask questions. But Greg, always a blast to be on, and glad that nothing crazy happened the last 3 weeks, and the Revolution are perfectly fine.
Ah, what a fun time to do this. You can follow us on Twitter at Revolution Recap. Be sure to follow us on Instagram, Threads, and Facebook. We are at Revolution Recap on all of those platforms. Also, thank you to our sponsor, BetOnline. When you sign up at BetOnline, be sure to use promo code BLEAV, BLEAV, for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Also, be sure to follow the Blazing Musket on Twitter or X or whatever it's called at Blazing Musket, and subscribe to their Substack, whether it's a paid or free option, and you'll receive every piece of Revolution news to your email inbox. Also, be sure to follow our friends at The Rebellion on Twitter and go to anyrebellion.org to learn more about them. Also, I wanted to give a shout out to everyone who voted for us in the podcast awards on Twitter. There was kind of a silly little poll for best MLS podcast. I believe we finished in third place, but we're the best Eastern Conference podcast. So that's something. We lost to The Corner of the Galaxy and Third Degree, which are much bigger platforms, and they do a very, very phenomenal job. So it was an honor to be in the mix with them. But thank you to everyone who took the time to vote for us there. It was really an honor to be making the final four on that poll. So thank you to everyone who did there. And also, please make sure you rate and review us 5 stars. I wanted to give a shout out to Duncan for the very kind review on iTunes. Made my day seeing that there. So if you haven't given us a review on iTunes or Spotify, please give us a review there. We'll be back following the Charlotte game next week, and hopefully we'll be talking about 3 points. Hopefully we'll be talking about this ship turning around. But if not, we'll be slamming that panic button, and we look forward to doing that. So until then, thank you everyone for listening, and go Rebs.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Save big money now on new siding from LP SmartSide at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding.
It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP SmartSide today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.